Hey guys, Charles from the future here. Just as a quick heads up, there was a few issues with Colton's microphone while we were recording it. Bradley has gone in and fixed a lot of those in editing, but just as an FYI, just be ready for that. I listened to this episode for QA. I think it sounds fine, but just brace yourself for a little bit of audio issues. I do apologize for that, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, and welcome to the show Gold Squadron Gaze. It's the podcast where Charles takes control of the podcast for several weeks because Bradley has to go do work or something stupid like that. And so Charles is just going to talk about Legends books for an extended period of time. I'm your host, Charles Rogers, and with me today, because it would be terribly boring to listen to me talk to myself for an hour, even though, to be clear, I 100% could do it, is a guest. Guest, would you like to introduce yourself and tell the people who you are? What's your backstory? What's your Wikipedia article?
Hello. Hi. Colt Mason is a human from Earth, born 12 BPY. I don't know what the conversion rate for that is.
I also don't know. It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, so...
Yeah, so born some amount of time after BPY.
I was born after the Battle of Yavin.
Yes, there we go.
Colton, you are joining us. The only thing I really know of that you do is the For Light and Dice podcast. Yes. Do you want to tell us, for the listeners who may be only tuning in for our Legends coverage and thus maybe haven't heard you on before, can you tell the listeners what is For Light and Dice?
Yeah, certainly. So For Light and Dice is a High Republic TTRPG actual play podcast. That involves a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, scoundrels, and quite frankly, batshit insane droids going around the High Republic and generally being a nuisance. It's great. It's fantastic. I play some characters, and they're great, and I love them, and nothing ever bad happens in the High Republic, so it's fine.
I think they would characterize themselves as not so much ne'er-do-well scoundrels, but quotes, victims of capitalist oppression, in quotes.
Yes.
Well,
no, that's...
One of them would characterize them that way. The others would roll their eyes. Yeah, we just wrapped up our first season of the show. At time of recording, we have recorded a special interseason break, which, if I'm timing this right, you will be hearing on, you will have heard the Thursday prior to this episode coming out, because this is not the episode that's going to be released next at time of recording. There's one in between. So if I'm doing my math right, if you listen to For Light and Dice, you would have heard the first part of Redacted Game Name.
I will take your word for it, Charles.
I am so good at math. I am so good at dates and numbers and knowing what day of the week it is. I am normal. I don't have a supremely messed up podcast producing brain. Yeah, Colton has also been, if you're interested, a guest on an episode of The Bad Batch, as well as an episode of The Mandalorian Season 3. So go back and listen to those episodes. Do not rewatch the episodes. I do not encourage people to go back and do that explicitly, as that transitions me nicely into, there is still currently strikes going on as of recording this. The WGA strike and the SAG-AFTRA strike are still going on. And what this means, particularly the SAG-AFTRA strike, is that SAG-AFTRA has asked people not to promote struck work. So they have asked people not only to not do free promo for things coming out currently, but also not do rewatch podcasts. So encouraging people via those episodes to go back and watch the visual media that's already on the streaming platforms. So in order to not do those things, we have been doing books and various other things. And today we will be talking about another Legends book. We're going to be talking about Outbound Flight. Yay. Colton, would you like some additional information on Outbound Flight, the novel, not the project?
Yes. Charles, I would. I'm just going to put my notes away that include additional notes on outbound flights.
Well, I'll do mine very quickly, and then if you have any additional trivia for us, now would be the time to give it.
Okay.
So let me give you some additional information on Outbound Flight was first published by Del Rey Books on January 31st, 2006. With a paperback edition released in 2007. It was written by one Timothy Zahn. Now, Colton, have you ever heard of Timothy Zahn?
His name sounds vaguely familiar, but no.
I know he's a bit of an obscure name for Star Wars fans. However, yeah, Timothy Zahn was one of the first people to write what we would largely consider to be a quote-unquote EU novel. His 1990s trilogy, the Thrawn trilogy, kickstarted the Star Wars Renaissance that actually led to, indirectly, the production of the prequel films. So Timothy Zahn is one of the guys you can thank for Star Wars existing in the form it exists today. Now, he wasn't the first EU novel. That was Splinter of the Mind's Eye. But he was what we consider the first sort of EU novel, the one that was written for that purpose. And that was 1991's Heir to the Empire. Since Heir to the Empire, Timothy Zahn has written, just a handful of Star Wars books, mostly centered around Thrawn. And in the Legends era, he wrote a lot for Mara Jade. And a lot of his books are interconnected. We're going to talk about Survivor's Quest a lot in this episode. But he wrote the Thrawn trilogy in the 1990s. He wrote Spectre of the Past, A Vision of the Future, which is the duology. He wrote Survivor's Quest, for which Outbound Flight is a prequel. And then in the new canon, he has written the 9 Thrawn books. Six. I'm getting ahead of myself because I assume 3 more are coming.
Probably.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
So he's written the 6 Thrawn books. Don't worry, you didn't miss 3. That would be Thrawn, Thrawn Alliances, Thrawn Treason, Chaos Rising, Greater Good, and Lesser Evil. The audiobook of Outbound Flight was released in 2007 and was narrated by Jonathan Davis. Jonathan Davis, if you did not know, if this is the first Legends episode you're tuning in on, he's read a fuckload of Star Wars books. Just a fucking ton of them. And he's still doing it. He's in, from a certain point of view, Return of the Jedi. That's how recent he is. He's still doing these books. We don't have time to go through necessarily all of them, but for our purposes, you just need to know that Jonathan Davis read the audiobook for The New Jedi Order Traitor, that novel. He read the audiobook for Star Wars Episode 3 Revenge of the Sith, both abridged and unabridged. He read the audiobook for Survivor's Quest, and those are the ones that stuck out to me as relevant to this episode. Colton, did you have any additional trivia or fun facts for us about the novel Outbound Flight?
Yes. You covered most of it, but some of the sort of meta info trivia that I found really interesting, I still have.
Give us some meta trivia, Colton. I didn't ask them to do this, by the way. They just came with a fuckload of notes.
Literature majors, we're insufferable. Anyway, Outbound Flight, the ship, is really designed to be a generational ship, which is a ship that first sort of entered the science and science fiction consciousness by Robert Goddard's 1918 essay, The Ultimate Migration. He mentioned storing people in suspended animation, and it didn't really become a generational ship until 1928 with Konstantin Tsiolkovsky's The Future of Earth and Mankind essay.
So this is like an old school, because this dates back, the concept of the Outbound Flight, and we're up top of the spoiler warning I'm eventually going to give, so this is safe. The content of the actual, like, idea of the Outbound Flight dates all the way back to the Thrawn trilogy itself in the 1990s. So it's early 1990s sci-fi is what Timothy Zahn was working off of when he created the idea of the Outbound Flight. In relation to Joris Sebaioth, I think, it's been decades since I read the Thrawn trilogy, or at least a decade since I've read the Thrawn trilogy.
Yeah. So,
but this is an old piece of sci-fi.
Yes, yes. However, an important distinction is this isn't technically a generation vessel. Because it is only on a, like, 20-year course, I believe it's stated, where it's, like, 10 years
yeah.
next galaxy and then 10 years back.
They have enough food and provisions to last them that long.
Yes, that's it.
So the idea is they're going to also pick up food on provisions on the way, but it's expected to last about 20 years. And they're going to drop off dreadnoughts and colony ships as they go, and then bring the rest of it back.
Which really puts it in mind less of a generational ship, and I personally think of it more as the Enterprise, specifically NCC-10.
Did you bring Star Trek into my Star Wars podcast, Colton?
D, yes. Yeah, I did. I think,
wow.
I think everything could be improved by a little Jean-Luc Picard.
You talked your way out of that very admirably. I'm impressed.
Thank you. I try. Because while generational ships usually are based on like a slow journey, this is more a ship that is designed for exploration that includes families, the families and civilians, which is what the NC 1701-D does. It's a flagship that has like an entire city within it, similar to the GSVs in Ian M. Banks's culture novels.
Wow, you're constantly bringing in these. We should have like Colton reading lists on your episodes. We should publish the list of books that Colton has drawn from in order to talk about whatever the fuck Colton is talking about.
Start by reading the Strugatsky brothers' Hard to Be a God.
I wonder who you're going to bring that up in relation to.
No, just in general, it's good. Mainly because The Future of Earth and Mankind was one of the inspirations for the Strugatsky brothers. Because it sort of posed like a very optimistic view of the Soviet state in reference to like space and exploration, which the Strugatsky brothers incorporated as major themes in their Noon Universe writing, which is sort of their
sub-author. I thought from the title you were going to bring it up in reference to Sabayoth, because I feel like that's something he would say.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I just...
which does transition me. Do you have any other fun general facts you found interesting before we dive into being very opinionated?
Not particularly. I was very, very, very pleased to see my favorite little droids everywhere in this novel, but that's neither here nor there. That's sort of an opinion, so yeah.
Well, now is a good time. So if you've listened to the other two episodes, you know that generally when I do my fun facts, I will then ask the guest up front what they thought of the book. I'm not going to do that for two reasons. Well, one reason, but I have two parts to it. And I'm going to back up a little bit, and I'm going to spoil the end of this episode, ironically. We always end, Colton, with the question, why do you think people should read this book? And I'm not going to say necessarily why up front I think people should read this book. I am going to spoil the end and say that I do think that if you are interested in legends, you should read this book. That it does a very good job of demonstrating to you what latter stage legends, particularly around 2006, what that was like, what the state of it was like, warts and all, that it's going to show you, it's going to basically show you what's the actual experience of this like. So if Revenge of the Sith is a piece of fucking art, and Death Star is some of the best Legends writing, but still does a pretty good job of teasing other things, Outbound Flight is going to show you exactly the experience of what it was like to read a Legends book in 2006, just contained down into a single book. And you may not like that, I'll be entirely honest, but it does do a good job of demonstrating that. However, the no spoilers policy that was on the previous two Legends books episodes, that does have to be rescinded. That's point two. So Colton and I are going to talk about things that happen that are treated as twists in this book. They're twists that if you are a Legends fan, you saw coming from a mile a fucking way. But understand that they are there, And so this is your spoiler warning for the novel Outbound Flight. If you are interested in reading this novel, if you are interested in getting into Legends and you don't know a lot about it and you don't want to, turn this episode off. It's been 18 good minutes. You learned about generational ships. You had a good time. It's over. And go read the book. You can listen to it being narrated by Jonathan Davis. And then come back and listen to the rest of this episode. Colton, do you have anything you want to say up front before I do the spoiler countdown?
Just read more science fiction, this and others. Yes.
Thank you, Colton. And the spoilers will, the gate will open. They could potentially pop out. So turn this episode off now in 3, 2, 1. Colton, yeah. What did you think of the novel Outbound Flight?
Things I loved.
Okay.
Palpatine being messy. So messy.
Every scene he's in, either as Palpatine or Sidious, every scene he's in is fucking amazing. I'm gonna have problems with the way Zahn writes some of the other characters, and admittedly it's not really Zahn's fault. However, his Palpatine is spot on, just a huge bitch.
So good. Second thing, sexy, sexy Thrawn. I love sexy, sexy Thrawn. Fantastic. Third bit, Yuuzhan Vong.
Oh, fucking hell. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, so that's one of the twists in the book, is that this is the book that I think explicitly confirmed in the text that at least Palpatine was telling some of his inner circle, or Sidious was telling some of his inner circle. The reason I'm doing the whole Empire thing is because these far outsiders are coming to attack the galaxy, and we need to be united, which is so fucking stupid. But this is the book that confirms that. And so the Yuuzhan Vong come up a lot. And also, we find out stuff about the Chiss Ascendancy and their experience with the Yuuzhan Vong.
Yes, they've had several encounters with...
Ar-Alani defeated them, which I feel like that would have been an interesting prequel short story had Legends not been rebooted.
I would have loved to read that.
Ar-Alani versus the Vong, like a Vong ship.
Yes, a Yuuzhan Vong.
I just call them the Vong.
Well, that's very rude.
Well, I'm going to be mildly speciesist towards them, Colton, because I don't like them.
That's fair.
I'm going to embrace my speciesism on this one.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. But yes, they are mentioned. This is kind of inadvertently a New Jedi Order prequel.
Which I enjoy very, very much. Things I disliked. My biggest gripe is how many times the text says Thrawn agreed, or agreed Thrawn. It's super minor, super nitpicky, but like, Tim, bud, we know Thrawn agrees because of what he said in the quotation marks right before you said Thrawn agrees.
I have a tinfoil hat theory about this book and Zahn's writing in general. Oh. You want to hear my tinfoil hat theory now?
Yes.
So you may have noticed, if you read Outbound Flight and then you read Thrawn 2017, that Outbound Flight is worse. And the reason I think is worse, I'm going to blame Timothy Zahn a bit, but I'm also going to blame Del Rey Books. And particularly, whoever it was that edited this book, I think did an atrocious job. I think they did not care about it to the same level that whoever edited Thrawn 2017 did. I think that a good editor would have caught a lot of this stuff, and that they didn't bother. They probably didn't edit. So that's my theory as to why some of the writing is weird, because I did find a lot of the writing stilted and weird, and I was like, this cannot be the same guy. I was like, one of my gripes about the book is I don't like the way he writes Obi-Wan and Anakin at all in this book.
I agree.
I cannot stand it.
That was my...
It is terrible.
Second on the list.
Oh, we skipped ahead?
Yeah.
Yeah. I cannot fucking stand the way he writes Obi-Wan and Anakin in this book, because Obi-Wan has basically no character, and Anakin is just, once again, they're doing the Attack of the Clones Anakin and just making that his whole personality. And, like, I think that... I was like, this cannot be the same guy that wrote Thrawn Alliances. His Anakin is so good in Thrawn Alliances. I was like, what happened? I think there was not editorial oversight, and I think he was working off of less help. That's That's my theory at any rate. Please tell us why you don't like the Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin bits in this book.
For the exact same reasons, Charles.
Wow, I love it when our guests come on and just agree with me. That is, in fact, why I bring guests on, is purely for the purpose of agreeing with me on things that I say.
So there was one bit about the Anakin-Obi-Wan thing that I did like, which was how Anakin managed to get all the information on that one planet that I'm forgetting the name of.
Starts with a B. I don't care to remember it.
Yeah. Because of his knowledge of pod racing. Like, I thought that was cool. That was a neat way of incorporating that.
Well, it's because he, like, shows empathy to that teenager. And yeah, he, like, helps him out. And he understands that, like, oh, teenagers aren't going to be, like, willing to talk to adults, like, when adults are around. But if you get a couple of kids hanging out, then they're going to say stuff. That, I did like that. I did like that a lot.
Other than that, I was like, this doesn't sound like Obi-Wan. It's funny. I was actually like, it was in that same bit. I was like, this doesn't, I've not heard one quip, one like sarcastic.
He's so dry.
One comment. But it,
he's so dry.
I thought that the next line I read was the one Obi-Wan quip in the entire book. I'm like, oh, well, there's, I suppose.
And like,
one.
I'm sorry. You cannot look me with a straight face. You cannot look me in the eye and tell me that even between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, Obi-Wan Kenobi would have let Joris Sabaoth get away with the shit he gets away with in this book. You cannot look at me with a straight face and tell me Obi-Wan Kenobi would not have done something about the shit that goes on Outbound Flight. Yeah. Like, God, no, there is no way Qui-Gon Jinn's Padawan is going to be like, yeah, this seems normal. This seems cool. You literally know it's not, Obi-Wan. Like, you know it isn't.
I do want to read the quip because I do think it's very good.
Okay, please read the quip to us.
So it's, maybe, Anakin said doubtfully as they returned to the end of the hedge and back onto the walkway. You know, maybe we all should carry trackers. Obi-Wan looked sideways at him. I can think of at least one person who ought to have one, he muttered under his breath. What was that? Never mind.
I read that out loud to my boyfriend when I was reading, because we were hanging out in his room and I was sitting there reading the book, and I believe I read that section out loud. That was the one moment I found very funny. What other gripes did you have with this book, Colton, before we get into mine?
My big one is that, so I just need to find the page. Because that's...
They have all the books. They have tabbed, by the way. They literature majored this shit. They came with notes. They came with tabs. This is why I love having Colton on. It's the same energy that Erin brings to her history episodes, where she has brought a list of, like, historical diatribes to put in, which is why we keep having her back, because I love those episodes.
So, in the text, on page 365, that is when Joris, however the hell you pronounce his last
name. Sabaoth, I believe, Sabaoth is how you're supposed to say it.
Turns to the dark side. Which,
really? Well, that fucking late in the book, huh?
Yeah, which is,
he said deeply sarcastically.
Because on page 29, he's yelling at a receptionist, which is when I would think was sort of the first big warning signs that he has turned to the dark side. Weird that.
Well, he like, so if you haven't read the book and you moved past the spoiler warning because you just wanted to know, this book is mainly divided up into two separate plots, really three separate plots, but one of them is barely a side plot. And the two main plots are a Jedi named Joris Sabaoth trying to get the Outbound Flight project off the ground, and then kind of like later taking over and instituting a Jedi-based fascism on the ship. And the other half is the Thrawn stuff about a group of traitors being scooped up by Thrawn. And those are all the best scenes in the book, are all the times George Cardass is talking to Thrawn. The Sabaoth stuff is, so he's portrayed like at the beginning as being a huge arrogant dick. And he just, the way he goes from huge arrogant dick to where he gets to at the end of the book, there are multiple moments where I'm like, you are already like on the dark side. Like, I know the way the dark side works, quote unquote, in Legends is a little bit different, but like, you're already there, dude. Like, you are force pushing people away from the door. You are like, even just like the force powers, you are holding that guy in place. Like at one point, Thrawn is on board Outbound Flight, and somebody has an idea to be like, talk to him and be like, hey, there's some weird fucking shit happening on the ship. Sabaoth just like holds him in place until like his whole body in place until Thrawn and Lorna Gensler are gone.
That scene, honestly, like it, ugh, it like, cause it describes that he couldn't even like move his tongue.
Yeah, no, it's there's points. I will say one thing for me is this book is a pretty good response to the argument that the Jedi kidnap children, because the Jedi do actually kidnap children in this book, and it's portrayed as unbelievably fucked up. And also, like, not even the other Jedi are really cool with it. Like, they go along with it because he's basically able to lawyer his way into doing it. But, like, that's one of the first signs that, like, oh, this is a bad situation that's going on.
Speaking of other Jedi, which is like the one other Jedi that we know of that isn't the like character, the protagonist that we like see this whole thing going through, Justin Munning.
Yes, so there's three main Jedi: Joris Sabaoth, Justin Manning, and Lorna Gensler. And Lorna Gensler is, or Lorana Gensler, is it Lorana?
I think it's.
I keep wanting to say, let me look. So Legends books, fun fact for our readers, actually had a list of dramatis personae at the front, which I actually think was good, and I think they should bring back. Do they have that list in this?
Not in this one,
Not in
at
this
least in my
one.
copy.
Some of them will have dramatis personae at the front. This one does not, but let me look up, see if I can find her
It is
name.
Lorana.
Lorana Gensler. See, I keep wanting to say Lorna because of Lorna D.
Or
Lorana Gensler, who
as that
is.
one kid says, Jedi Jizzler? Which, oh my god, I cackled
He's been
so.
waiting since Survivor. When did Survivor's Quest come out? 2004. He was waiting for since 2004. He's been waiting to make that joke. But you had a point about Justin Manning, who is one of the other Jedi Knights who is on board this sh or the other Masters who's on board this ship.
So, two things about him. One, do you want to hear my conspiracy theory about him?
I would love to hear your conspiracy theory about Jedi Master Justin Manning.
It's a Star Wars name conspiracy.
Okay, who do you think the Star Wars name?
So, you know how he dies at the end of the book?
Yeah, spoiler alert, he dies.
I think he is part of the tradition of I'm a gun die, because his name is Justin Monning, or if you say it differently, Justin Morning. Morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I thought because his name is Justin, he's probably named after somebody.
I mean, that also could be true, but just like I was saying it in my head and I'm like, Morning. That kind of sounds like morning, as in like the time of day, and then I was like, which also sounds like morning. Oh, he's dead.
Did you have anything else you want to mention before I talk about some of my thoughts on the book and also gripes with the book?
No. I not at this moment.
So, I remember reading this book when it came out in 2006. I actually have, same with Revenge of the Sith, unlike Death Star, who I loaned out to a friend in high school and never got back. Liam, if you're listening, I will send you my address. Please send me my copy of Death Star back. I will send you my Legends branded copy in return, but I just want my original hardcover back. No, I haven't spoken to this man in years. But I do have the original hardbound Outbound Flight that I read, and it was one of the books that I was like, oh my god, this is so fucking cool. You know, Legends is the shit. Because I was sort of into it by that point.
Sure.
Like, I was into it a little bit by that point. I think either Outbound Flight was one of the first ones I read. It might have been the first one I read, and I just kind of knew some of this stuff. But it was very early on. But I was like, oh, this is so cool. This is incredible. Rereading it has some crow's feet, like
Sure.
a lot of crow's feet. I was actually really disappointed in it when I reread it. And because I think it really is sort of emblematic of legends just generally as a whole in the state of it post New Jedi Order, in that the bits of it where it's trying to be its own thing, I thought were fucking amazing. The whole plot with Thrawn and George Cardass. George Cardass walked, he strutted that runway so that Eli Vanto could run. George Cardass was my Eli Vanto.
Yeah, I mean,
do you think that George Cardass and Grand Admiral Thrawn explored each other's bodies?
I think, and I'm not being a shit, I think Maris, Cardass, and Thrawn had a threesome.
Oh, we'll get to Maris in a fucking second. I have some thoughts about Maris Verassi. But it was the parts where it's like its own thing are really good. And then the parts where Zahn is trying to tie it into the broader overarching narrative that they were trying to carve out for sort of Del Rey books when they took it over from Bantam, and they were trying to sort of distance themselves from the Bantam era books and try to keep everything contained, which sort of meant containing around the New Jedi Order and the Yuuzhan Vong. Also, Vergeer comes up a lot in this book.
Yeah.
Like a bizarre amount. So for those who are not in the know, Colton, before I'm like, why the fuck is Vergeer being mentioned so much in this book? Do you want to tell us who Vergeer is?
Yeah. So
because I had to tell you who Vergeer was.
Okay, I'm really bad with names, so but yes. So Vergeer is a weird bird. she is a force-sensitive Fosh, which is a, I don't believe there are any Fosh in canon.
All you need to know about the Fosh is that there's a non-zero chance Colton would play this character in a TTRPG. That's all you need to know about them.
Yeah, I'm just going to give you the first sentence of the Fosh from Star Wars, The New Essential Guide to Alien Species, which was...
I told you, they come with fucking research.
Yeah. The Fosh are a mysterious avian species that most scientists believe hail from the corporate sector of the galaxy. They are extremely rare species and are believed to be nearly extinct. As in recent years, only one Fosh has actually been observed in person. That one Fosh being Vergeer.
So Vergeer, as a character, was created for the New Jedi Order novel Traitor by Matthew Stover.
I believe she's actually in the book before.
Okay. Traitor. Well, she was created for New Jedi Order, and Matthew Stover wrote the character. The character was then retconned in a way that both Matthew Stover and I find very dumb.
I do too.
And she is also mentioned in, I'm not going to spoil because there is a non-zero chance that with these Legends episodes getting the traction that they are, it is entirely possible that I may do Legacy of the Force at some point. So I don't want to give away what's going on with Vergeer, but she is mentioned a lot in this book because some of the people there are there to find her. Obi-Wan in particular, I think, is there to join just to see if they can get some idea of where this woman is, which is clear setup for some stuff that's going to happen later. But every time she gets mentioned, I'm like, yes, I know that the Vergeer being missing is a big plot point.
Yeah. I am currently rereading Traitor.
The minute I told Colton, like, yeah, Vergeer was the weird fucking bird thing from Traitor, they were immediately like, let me grab Traitor and reread it.
And she's awesome. Like, she's this weird fucking, multiple times she says, like, everything I tell you is lies. And then to a different character, she says, everything I tell you is truth. And, like, it's this weird...
She's really cool when she's being handled by Matthew Stover.
Yes. She also has magic tears, which is apparently a Fosh trait, where they can essentially just duplicate any chemical, just by crying. Like, they can even make Bacta, which I thought was really neat. Anyway, sorry, that's completely separate. Pushing Traitor away.
Pushing Traitor away to another day. Maybe we'll do Traitor on this podcast. Depends on how long the strikes go and or how much time we have to fill in between seasons of Star Wars television. So a lot of the characters in this book and a lot of the situations in this book are setups for Survivor's Quest. Like, Survivor's Quest is kind of the second book in this series, because Luke and Mara Jade come along and fix all of the stuff from the ending of the book. Like, basically, if it's not the New Jedi Order and it's not directly from the films, something is in this book because it's going to get mentioned in Survivor's Quest.
Or Heir of the Empire.
Or Heir to the Empire, kind of. But most of the Vagari are in Survivor's Quest. George Cardass is in Survivor's Quest. Admiral Formby is in Survivor's Quest. They fucking find Lorana Gensler and Thrass's skeletons. I didn't even mention Thrass is in this book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thrass is in this book. The way he's written is so weird.
I find it, yeah, I don't, I think I probably should have added that too.
The way Thrass and Ar'alani are written is so fucking weird compared to how much depth he gives them in the Ascendancy books. And here, Thrass is kind of has a quiet character arc in the last third of the book and then immediately fucking dies.
I wouldn't even say third, I'd say like quarter or fifth.
Maybe I'm being generous. So, which actually does, speaking of Ar'alani, I do have to gripe slightly about this book in one particular way, which is, other than Lorana Gensler, Timothy Zahn doesn't know how to write women at this point. He gets better, so I'm not going to make a blanket statement, Timothy Zahn doesn't know how to write women, period. Because I've read the Ascendancy books, and that man does know how to write a girl boss. He did figure it out, but as of this book, if you're coming into this expecting Maris Ferassi and Ar'alani to be the same as the girl bosses in the Ascendancy, horrible news for you about these characters. Ar'alani, like, I get that it's supposed to be a twist at the end that she's working with Thrawn.
Which I do love, like, that is one of my favorite tropes, even though it wasn't accomplished terribly successfully in this.
Yeah, the way she's written in her scenes is just so cold. Like, she does not have girl boss energy. Despite being a girl boss in this book, she does not have girl boss energy. She's just cold and dismissive. And then Maris Ferassi, fucking Christ. So Maris Ferassi does very little in this book except hype man Thrawn.
Yeah, and be someone who's like, oh no, I can't stand violence. Swoon.
Like, yeah, she's like, in the text, it's trying to make it seem like, oh, she's the idealist of the group. But one, she's the one woman in the entire party that gets swept up by Thrawn. And number two, there's also a weird thing where, like, both of the men in this group, because it's two men, the ship's captain and then Cardass, and then Maris Ferassi is the third one. And they kind of imply that Maris and the captain are an item. But, like, there's this weirdly sexist plot point where, like, all of the men assume she's sleeping with Thrawn, which she does say later on, like, no, I wasn't. That's stupid. But that's not a moment. Like, it should be, like, all of the men just assume this, and she's like, no, I'm not, and nobody really believes her, and we move on, and it's so bizarre. And then, like, at the end of the book, it's supposed to be, like, George Cardass's character development is that he fucking lies to her. And Thrawn tries to frame it as, like, oh, well, there's so few idealists in the galaxy, we would hate to take another way. Yeah, you just lied directly to this woman's face. One of the only three women, prominent women in the story, and the character development for a man is to lie to her and spare her womanly feelings.
Yep.
Fuck that. Fuck that. Oh my god. No, I read that. I was like, what the fuck?
I was like, I forgot how it ended, and I was like, he's gotta tell her the truth, right? Like, that's,
she's gonna find out.
Well, I mean, assuming she dies in either the Clone Wars or the Empire.
Yeah, she's never fucking brought up again. Some of the characters, I think, are never fucking brought up again. Let me check her.
I mean, her
appearances and make sure. Yeah, she's mentioned in Vision of the Future, and she never fucking appears again. Kidman Doriana is another one who is super prevalent in this book, super interesting, and then fucking disappears from the narrative. And it's not like it was the Disney buyout, because that happened, the Legend switchover didn't happen until 2014. It was almost 8 years later Doriana just doesn't fucking show up again, despite being directly responsible for much of the events of this book. Yeah, Maris Ferassi never shows up again, so we never know if she found out the truth about Outbound Flight. We never know her reaction to him. Because the story is not about her. The story is about a man. She is there to facilitate the character development of the men around her. She undergoes no character development and learns no lessons over the course of this book. And it's so fucking frustrating to read, knowing this is the same man who's going to write Padme some of the best of any male writer. How?
Don't read Heir to the Empire if you're worried about female.
Oh, fucking Christ.
After this, I re-scanned.
Andy has some thoughts, our guest on the Revenge of the Sith episode. Andy has some thoughts about Heir to the Empire, which I agree with. As I'm tempted to reread those books, as a Mon Mothma defender, I do feel like I would become violent.
I kind of want to now have you read those and just see your reactions, because that would be funny.
I might do something with
those. It would
make good
content.
Oh, Christ, you're speaking my language.
Spoilers, I guess, for the original Thrawn trilogy. Favorite thing about the original Thrawn trilogy is how Kabouth, or whatever the hell his name
Sabaoth.
Is. Yeah, comes back, also with two U's.
As a clone.
As a clone.
As a clone. Yeah, I did like...
Crazy.
Lorana Gensler kind of having imposter syndrome. I liked her, because I think we were inside her head. And I think when Zahn gets inside a character's head and treats them as a character in the story, then we get interesting stuff. So, Lorana Gensler's fine. Like, she's a perfectly well-written character. She kind of has imposter syndrome. She doesn't really get... I do think she and Justin Maning should have been combined into one character. I think she doesn't get as much agency as maybe she could have.
I agree about the agency, but I don't think they should have been one character. Because I like that there's another master that is also being, like, kowtowed. Because then I feel like it would just be, like... showing that she can't stand up to Kabouth through the entire thing, but having the second master shows that, like, it's not just her, which I think...
Okay, I can kind of see that. But also, I feel like her realization that... And she kind of has this realization of, like, you know, maybe she should have stood up to him, maybe she could have said something to him, but now she's going to do kind of whatever she can to save the lives of the Outbound Flight survivors at the end of the book... Which I felt would have hit harder, I think, if she'd had a stronger role in the narrative. But she's not ineptly written. She's not... I didn't find her as offensively gross as I found the writing of Maris or Arlani to an extent. But yeah, I mean, parts of this novel are good. I don't want to say, like...
Really?
I know this episode's going to be come across as slightly negative. However, I do want to say the novel is pretty good overall. Like... We're fixating on bits we didn't like, but all of the stuff with Thrawn, when it's not being weirdly sexist toward Maris, all of the stuff with Thrawn is really good. And you can see, more so I think than in canon, you can definitely see how this Thrawn turned into Heir to the Empire Thrawn. And his relationship with the Chiss Ascendancy, his relationship with war, his relationship with his enemy, what he has seen, what he has experienced. It makes sense why this Thrawn turns into a villain. It makes sense why he's like this, I found. In a way that I haven't necessarily found with the Ascendancy books.
Yeah, yeah, I fully agree. Is now the time that we talk about the Iraq War?
I think now is the time for us to talk about the Iraq War. He said as he took a big sip of his coffee.
Yeah.
And hit his microphone. Sorry to Bradley in editing for whacking the microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about the Iraq War, because oh boy.
So in 2005 and 6, when this was being written, there was a thing happening called the Iraq War.
For our kids in the audience who were born prior, or born after the release of the Weird Al Yankovic song, The Saga Begins, Yeah, there was this thing called the Iraq War that was happening.
I have bad news for you, I think, also, by the way.
What was the bad news?
Technically, I'm included in that group
Oh,
of people
for
born after the Weird Al Yankovic song, The Saga Begins.
long
Anyway.
for the sweet and merciful embrace of the grave. Colton, please, please get. I became so frustrated at learning this information that I almost called you Bradley. That's how frustrated that piece of information made me.
Yeah, so a big portion of the Iraq War, or at least what the reasons that we had for,
Reasons in big air quotes, by the way.
yes, massive
Massive air
wholesale
quotes.
war crime air quotes.
We are not, for legal purposes, directly accusing the Bush administration and the United States government at the time of war crimes. We're just implying that they did them.
Yeah, allegedly.
Alleged war crimes taking place. As Colton takes a big sip of coffee.
So, a big reason that we went to war was to find supposed weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, in, one might say, a preemptive strike. Now, why is this important?
Well, one could also say that we also became more authoritarian at home under certain doctrines like the Patriot Act,
Yes.
in order to combat the threat of potential invasion from an enemy that we at least were presented to us as extremely well organized and coming to destroy our way of life. That was also a thing that was very prevalent in both the actual media at the time and curiously fiction writers with no real distinction between the two. This is also, I think, important context for the 2006-ness of this novel.
Yes. Star Wars, since the Iraq War has been a thing, has, for all intents and purposes, been about the Iraq War. There's a reason Anakin says in Revenge of the Sith, "If you're not with me, you're against me," which is a, I believe, a direct
A
quote from
direct quote
George
from
Bush.
George W. Bush.
But Star Wars isn't political.
No, Star Wars is not political. There's not a senator named Hallie Bertone.
Newt
The
Gunray
villain is not
isn't.
Gunray. Yeah, the Nemoidians show up in this book, and oh boy, let me tell you, coming from Brotherhood last week, where the Nemoidians actually got some like pathos and depth, to Vice Lord Siv Cav. Oh, fucking yikes,
Yeah,
dude. Like,
that was
ooh,
another.
boy. We're getting off track.
Yes.
Hal, Colton, but why are you bringing up the Iraq War in relation to the 2006 novel Outbound Flight?
It might be because of as I mentioned that we did an premeditated strike
A
because
preemptive strike.
preemptive, yes. Pre well, both. Allegedly.
Oh boy, this episode's going. I am regretting putting a spoiler warning at the top of the episode because this is some of the funniest, most unhinged shit I think I've done on one of these Legends episodes.
Because Thrawn, his whole character arc is in this story is the Chiss Ascendancy has a strict law in their military functions is that the Chiss Ascendancy will never fire first. They will only attack if attacked. Now Thrawn doesn't like this, because he's a good general. A big theme of this book is like, what are the ethics of premeditated strikes? Ursula K. Le Guin. In her Ursula K. Le Guin's The Left Hand of Darkness, which is a fantastic science fiction novel, mentions that that fiction writers in general, especially science fiction writers, do not predict the future. It is not their job to know what is going to happen. It is their job to write fiction about the current times, to hold a mirror up to society. Of course, Bertolt Brecht argues that he says, that art isn't a mirror, it's a hammer that one shapes reality with. But that's neither here nor there.
In Star Wars terms, there's a reason why the prequels were basically about the Iraq War, and the sequels were basically about the re-return of fascism, with a new generation of young people being manipulated by propaganda from the older generation to radicalize them against their families and against what they see as an ineffective government. You should read Bloodline by Claudia Gray. It is excellent and hits in like a blow to the face at some points.
I need to read more non-legend Star Wars.
You really do. I think most people could benefit from reading a little bit of both. Because I think, too, that for me, Legends, you can see the building bones of what canon is in Legends. And I also think that there's a lot of valuable stuff in Legends, like just generally as books. However, please continue. We have spent about 10 minutes trying to get from the Iraq War to the Outbound Flight novel.
So Thrawn engages in multiple preemptive strikes throughout the book. One against, both against the Vagari. I think that's how you pronounce it.
The Vagari and the Trade Federation. And the Trade Federation one, the way that they try to talk him out of that is fucking hilarious. The way that they try to insist that no, because they launched their fighters. They launched their fighters, and that was clearly an act of aggression, which it was right. He was correct that they were sending the fighters to attack them, but also like, okay, yeah. Sure, Jan.
I would argue that that wouldn't be included in his preemptive strikes, because
the book seems to think that it was.
Well, that's true, but he, like, because...
I could defend that one in military court. I don't think I could defend the Vagari one.
Oh, definitely not. No. I mean, he just showed up, shot a bunch of things, stole one of their ships, and then fucked off. Right. Anyway, right, this is just like, this book is a discussion of the ethics of preemptive strikes, which is a major portion of the Iraq War's basis for existing, or supposed basis for existing.
You can definitely tell, like I mentioned at the top of the episode, you can tell the 2006 of it all when you read this book. You can definitely tell, like, there was some underlying stuff going on with this book. And Thrawn, I think, as a character is interesting in relation to this, because I wouldn't call him a villain in this book, but I wouldn't call him particularly heroic either. He's portrayed as being right, like in the stuff that he says, which is kind of what's alarming, but he's also not necessarily portrayed as being a very good guy in this, in a way that he's not portrayed in the canon books. The canon Thrawn, at least when he's around the Ascendancy, isn't like a bad dude. He just has some contradictory ideas. This Thrawn is more than willing to, like, he's willing to attack the Vagari ships even with the human prisoners outside and rationalize it away.
Oh yeah, we should explain that a little bit.
So the Vagari, who are like space pirates in this book, basically have the space equivalent of lashing human prisoners to the sides of their ships to make it hard to fire on.
Yes, which they're described as nomadic, specifically not having a home planet.
Yes.
Which I'm sure has no references in contemporary politics.
Yep. And they take POWs that they use against the nominal heroes of the book. And then when Cardass actually goes in and talks to one of them, this guy is portrayed as both really ineffective and also really, like, flowery in how he describes himself. It's like your eminence or something is what he wants to be referred to as.
That is exactly what it is.
I'm not directly accusing Timothy Zahn of anything, but I will say that it is.
It's not. Do we have
it's
time
2006.
For a discussion of coding?
It's 2006, and everything is coded a certain way. Yeah.
Also, minor gripe. I don't think human shields should work in science fiction, because at the distance of space combat, it's very unlikely that they're going to realize human shields are human shielding. Like, if you're, 100,000 kilometers away, you're not going to notice that there's
the benefit to Star Wars is you can hand wave that with technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's Fast and Furious Star Wars.
You have to Fast and Furious Star Wars. Shout out to the divas. But yes, Fast and Furious, they're not listening to this episode. I don't think either of them has read Outbound Flight, so I highly doubt they're listening to this episode. But shout out to y'all anyway. Go listen to Dark Side Divas. They are covering Light of the Jedi,
which is a much better book.
Yes, Colton is finally catching up on The High Republic.
Very slowly.
A book that's much better than this one. This book is very 2006. That's really all I can say about it. Is this book is very 2006 in terms of its politics, in terms of its coding, in terms of the era of Star Wars that we're in terms of how Zahn is writing these characters. And like, that's the most accurate depictor I can use for this. Do you have anything else that you particularly want to bring up
that we have not previously addressed? Plot line at all.
Oh, the Kenman Doriana plot. Yes. Dorinina? Let me look up his last name. Kenman Doriana. So if somehow you're listening to this episode and you did not read the book, Kenman Doriana is basically he's Darth Sidious's like sneaky little spy dude who goes around and does spy shit. And he genuinely does. I've skipped over him for a lot of this episode because I found his stuff pretty unremarkable, just because it wasn't bad, but it wasn't interesting enough for me to devote time to. But yeah, he's like a little spy dude doing spy shit, and he has aliases, he has connections inside the Trade Federation, he has a day job.
Which is spying on some functionary called Palpatine, I think?
Yeah, he works for some politician named Dame Palpatine, but he secretly works for Darth Sidious. And there's a point where he fucking slags off Palpatine to Sidious's face. He's like, Palpatine's so ineffective that I'll be able to do this really easily. And you know Sidious is over there being like,
like, honestly, one of my favorite scenes in the book, it's from his perspective. He's like, all right, here's your final notes, Palpatine. I'm ahead home. Heads home, like, 30 minutes, and then immediately calls Sidious. So, like, I just know Palpatine was just sitting in his office, like, says goodbye, and then is just like, hood, and like, yes, you've done well, my student. Well, not student. He's not Force sensitive, but like,
well, it's also interesting, because part of this book is concerned with how we get Thrawn to the point where he's at in Heir to the Empire, and so part of it is, like, the radicalization of Mithra Naroto. That stuff is really interesting.
Yes.
So brief, but so interesting, because Kenman basically gives him this whole speech about how he has to toe the line very carefully. It's kind of a funny, like, takedown of the way the Jedi are written in Legends, because he goes in and he basically is a Jedi hater. And he's like, yeah, the Jedi are like this force cult that's super involved in politics. They're kind of fucked up. It's kind of fucked up how much power they have. This is super messed up, actually, because George Cardass is in the room. And if he says anything that's just a lie, George Cardass will contradict him. And then he has a private meeting with Thrawn, and he's like, no, 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 no. So the reason we're doing this whole thing is because the invasion justifies fascism, actually. And the Yuuzhan Vong are coming, so it's cool that we're trying to, like, strip away people's civil liberties and wipe out this entire religion. That's fine, actually. And Thrawn's like, oh, damn, you kind of have a point. Thrawn goes through the same character arc. Thrawn goes through the same character arc as white men misinterpreting the plot of Warhammer 40k. The Zoom audio is muted. So I'm just going to describe for you the reaction Colton had when I said this. It was like inhaling the entire contents of a helium-filled balloon too quickly and choking on the air. I'm going to give them a second to recover.
Warhammer is a satire, right, guys?
No, it's the people that are like, Warhammer is completely serious. We should do this in the face of alien threats. The God Emperor of Mankind was right, actually. The Imperium is good, and I'm like, oh my god, no.
My issue with that
is you've missed the point. You've missed the whole point.
That's not the point anymore. Because it used to be, right? Because Warhammer was specifically designed as a satire of...
But yeah, the point of original 40K was, wouldn't it be fucked up if we became the monsters to fight the monsters? But and now it's like, look at how cool the monsters are. And I'm like, Oh my. This is what happens when fans write things. They misinterpret the point of it.
I actually like a lot of the Warhammer fiction. I think it's pretty well written. I just don't think Warhammer fans have read it.
I've always joked that one of the things I've always wanted to do is write a Warhammer 40k novel, because it would be the Last Jedi of 40k novels, in that I would get it completely right and people would misinterpret the hell out of it. I badly want to write this book at some point in my career. I would love to write a 40k novel that's just explicit about how fucked up the Imperium actually is supposed to be. I would love to do this. We have tangented into 40k. However, Thrawn is kind of undergoing that sort of radicalization in this book, which is sort of glossed over, but I feel like it shouldn't be. I feel like it should be like way more addressed, the fact that this guy basically comes in and goes, no, the authoritarianism we're doing is fine, because it kind of like soft explains why he does the shit he does in Heir to the Empire.
My biggest, like, now that we're talking about this, my biggest gripe is that, like, this book does not argue that point, right? It doesn't argue against.
It doesn't have any real arguments, period, is part of the issue with it.
Except for the aesthetic argument, which is Thrawn is, for all intents and purposes, the good guy. And if he is in agreement with the idea that fascism could prevent invasion, then because of that, just like baseline, I think, unfortunately, it does argue for rather than against.
The problem is, this is, we've now entered the era, right? So there's an era where Timothy Zahn is writing Thrawn as a villain. And then there's an era where he kind of starts to fall in love with Thrawn a little bit. What is it? Choices of One? It's either Choices of One or Allegiance. I think it's Allegiance, which is the first instance of Thrawn facing like another villain who is worse than him. So he gets to be the Sherlock Holmes as opposed to the Moriarty. But this book is solidly in the era of Timothy Zahn really likes Thrawn. And he doesn't want to ever really have anyone contradict Thrawn and be shown to be right in contradicting him. I feel like this would have been a much stronger narrative if George Cardass had ultimately come down on the side of Thrawn is wrong.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
If he had seen Thrawn engage Outbound Flight and destroy Outbound Flight and basically be manipulated by Kenmin Doriana into doing this, and had said, wow, that's super fucked up, actually.
Yeah, maybe the murder of 50,000 civilians wasn't...
Which you don't feel, because we only see a handful of them in the book. But yeah, Thrawn kills a lot of people.
In fact, I think every single named civilian on the ship survives.
Civilian, yes. Every single named civilian on the ship survives, but it's only like 57 of them.
I think it's 47 specifically.
47 specifically. I don't know how many people are actually on the ships. Like, I know that they had like room to expand outwards.
It was said as 50,000.
It was 50,000. Yeah, and that's, the ship feels small. But yeah, Thrawn kills like tens of thousands of people in this book. And we're just kind of gloss over it. Yeah, we just kind of gloss over it because George Cardass is way more focused on like making sure Thrawn doesn't get punished for this.
At the moment that he's killing all those people, Cardass is just wanting not to die horribly.
Yes.
In one of the bubbles of the...
And that maybe explained it a little bit, but also like, I don't know.
Also, technically, it wasn't Thrawn that killed them all. It was Doriana who pressed the button while Thrawn was dying.
Yeah, which is also bullshit. Complete fucking bullshit, and an ass cheap move. It should have been like, Thrawn basically set everything up of Thrawn was going to do this, and the narrative gets away with not having Thrawn do this by having Doriana push the button to actually kill all these people. But yeah, that's extremely fucked up. This novel doesn't hold up well.
I still liked it.
I liked it. I just don't think, to be clear, again, at the end of this, I have slagged off a lot of this novel. I liked it. It's well written. Much of the overarching stuff is very good. It's just when you start analyzing it, it starts falling apart at the seams. And that's a problem, which transitions me nicely into our variation of final thoughts that we have for the Legends books, which is, Colton, why do you think people should read this book?
Because it's fun. Like I think it is genuinely fun. The fighting is really, really exciting. Like how Timothy Zahn describes the definitely, definitely valid things to do. Those are really interesting. Especially there's a fight. The fight against the Trade Federation is like some of the best naval combat. In a lot of Star Wars fiction that I've
Because
read.
Thrawn basically takes out like an aircraft carrier with like the
Two aircraft
equivalent of
carriers.
a with the equivalent of a Coast Guard patrol boat fleet. And like he has 12 little Coast Guard patrol boats and he's up against an aircraft, two aircraft carriers, and he takes one of them out
Well, it's two
and
aircraft
captures the other
carriers
ones.
and like six cruisers as well.
Yeah,
Like, there's
he takes
also.
them all out. It's fucking amazing shit.
My only minor gripe is there's no droid characters in this entire book. Every single character, except for the waitress in the diner at that one planet, that is the only droid that is named, and it's not even named, it just has a speaking line that's like, what do you want to drink? I think it's a P4A droid. Anyway, that's not important. Other than that, yeah, just read it. It's fun. The description of hyperspace while he's in like this clear bubble on this ship is I love. And yeah, sexy, sexy Thrawn.
I think people should read this book for one of two reasons. You should either read it because it is good, it has a lot of problems, it has a lot of flaws, a lot of it doesn't stand up to analysis. But when you're in the moment and reading it, it is a good, entertaining story about how pride leads to destruction, how somebody, it wrestles with some very interesting questions. Does it provide answers to those questions? No. But it does wrestle with those questions in a very interesting way. And so if I think you're just looking for a good book, this is a good book. It's in, I would say, some of the top legend stuff for me. It's not super in that top tier. Like I'm not gonna put it alongside Revenge of the Sith or Death Star, but it's good. It's some of the best legends had to offer, just in terms of being an interesting narrative that's trying to do interesting things and really wrestle with these questions. Or if you're the type of person that's like, I'm really interested to get into legends and I kind of want to see what I'm in for. If you want to see what you're in for post 2001, this is a good look into that. You're going to get Clone Wars, Obi-Wan, and Anakin. You're going to get a good look at what that was written like. You may not like it, but you're going to get a good look at it. You're going to get a good look at the state of things in terms of their overarching mythology that they were building, because they're going to bring up Vergeer, they're going to bring up the Yuuzhan Vong, they're going to bring up other stuff that has happened over the course of particularly the Del Rey era of publishing up to that point. They're going to bring up a lot of in Survivor's Quest. If you read this and you're like, that was really good, I want to find out what happened to Dean Jensler. I want to find out what happened to Jorid Presser. I want to find out what happens to the Vagari. You can read this and then read Survivor's Quest, and they form sort of their own little duology in the middle there. So I do think the book is worth reading, you know, despite having some gripes with it. I do think it is worth reading, both for somebody who wants to see Zahn wrestle with some of these themes, but also just what was Legends like at this point? What was the experience of one of reading these books that's tied into the overarching narrative? Because this was a point where they were tying more things into the overarching narrative. Prior to New Jedi Order, there really wasn't one. There really wasn't a sense that there's New Jedi Order and Clone Wars Multimedia Project were the two things that really changed that and had the idea that you can have something in the expanded universe that's set up and referenced throughout multiple pieces of media. And so this is a good example of what that was like at the time. If you're reading the canon books and going, why aren't they referencing other canon books more? This is what that looks like. If you're reading a book that's referencing other books, it's not a thing that's in the movie. Colton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
Me,
you.
for joining me and the cat who's currently outside the door. Do you have anything you would like to promote? A certain podcast, for example?
I think you all should listen to Dark Side Divas. No. I mean, listen to Flad. It's fun.
Flat is for Light and Dice, a Star Wars TTRPG actual play podcast.
Yeah. Also, read New Jedi Order. The Yuuzhan Vong are amazing, and I love them. They're fantastic. And Charles can't say anything because we don't have time for it. Ha 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 ha
And you cleverly snuck this into the
ha.
plug section, and it would be rude of me to interrupt you during the plug section. So I guess if you want to plug New Jedi Order, fine.
Great, it's great. Nothing bad happens to any of the characters or any of the planets. Everything's fine.
New Jedi Order does feature the birth of the person who will eventually grow up to be my teen crush, Ben Skywalker. So, like, he's in them as like a baby, but he's there.
Yeah,
Sure. I'm trying to think of what else is in New Jedi Order that I actually recommend.
Coruscant
Vergeer.
falling. Yeah, Vergeer. Honestly, the novel
The
Traitor,
novel Traitor, generally.
I think if you know like the base of what's happening in New Jedi Order, Traitor is a standalone novel.
Matthew Stover wrote it with that intention. He wrote it with the intention that you didn't need to know what was happening in the broader war to be able to pick up Traitor and read it, and you get a cohesive story from beginning to end. We don't have time to get into Jason Solo and Legacy of the Force right now, but I may get to it at some point. For now, Colton, thank you again for joining me to talk about Outbound Flight. This was a journey because I reached out. So I discovered, this is the last thing we'll end on. I discovered that most of the Thrawn Twitter has not read Outbound Flight. And I discovered this because I kept messaging people and being like, hey, have you read Outbound Flight? I need someone to talk about it. Because I knew Andy was going to talk about Revenge of the Sith. I knew Ryan was going to talk about Death Star. But I needed somebody for Outbound Flight because these were the three books I wanted to do. And I was just like, have you read Outbound Flight? Have you read Outbound Flight? Have you read Outbound Flight? And the consistent answer I was getting was no, I haven't. So finally, in the FLAD recording last weekend, or a weekend, last weekend or two
Yeah,
weekends
last
ago,
weekend.
last weekend, I expressed my frustration that, like, I have not found anyone who's actually read this fucking book. And it's so bizarre because everyone's obsessed with Thrawn, but no one has read Outbound Flight. And Colton was like, I've read Outbound Flight.
Yeah, after I was done dealing with my microphone issues, which prevented me from saying, "Oh, hey, I love that novel."
So I was like, Colton, come join me. Talk about Outbound Flight, please. God, I want to do this. I am setting up something special for next week. I don't want to make any promises I can't keep, but it's very promising. Ideally, I do have to issue. This is the thing Charles fucked up. I actually didn't know it at the time, but I'm framing it as the thing Charles fucked up. So I know we said on our Brotherhood episode, which came out prior to this, that the week after we were going to be starting Bradley and I to cover the Darth Vader 2017 run. That is not true anymore. There is ideally another episode that's going to come in between those. I just have to make sure I can actually record it. So we may be doing at least one more Legends episode, possibly per of conversation I had with Bradley, two more before we get into Darth Vader. But that is coming eventually. For now, Colton, one final time, thank you for joining me. My immediate reaction to that was, and don't griff it up because of RuPaul's pod race. However, thank you, Colton, and Bradley, go ahead and run our socials.
Thank you for listening to Gold Squadron Gaze. Did Charles fuck something up? Send us a message at goldsquadrongaze@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at goldsquadgaze. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at goldsquadrongaze. Subscribe to us on YouTube at goldsquadrongaze, where we post the podcast as well as exclusive content. Please join us next week and every week for more of Gold Squadron Gaze.